Armstrong and Getty Show. This week, my wife and I are taking our son, actually both sons, going to pull Sam out of school so we can make it to. We're going to see a doctor to try to figure out what's wrong with my youngest son, which I've talked about on and off on the air over the years. To try to figure out what's wrong with him. We don't know what's wrong with him. His brain doesn't work right. And he knows his brain doesn't work right. He talks about it all the time. It's a tough situation. He stays up all night long, several days in a row sometimes.
And it's not like I can't get to sleep.
He doesn't want to sleep. He just doesn't need to sleep for several days in a row. It's got the looks of being bipolar, which almost never happens for somebody who's 6 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's practically unheard of, but that's what it looks like. We're going to be seeing supposedly the best person in the world on this subject, and I hope we get some result, because it's tough on the whole family. It's really tough on him. I feel so bad for him, because among things that he deals with is he has to pee, like, every 90 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's an anxiety thing. It's not a physical thing. We've had that ruled out with scans and all kinds of stuff. It's an anxiety thing. And he has to pee, like, every 90 seconds for some reason. And it's pretty tough to live your life that way, you can imagine.
I would say.
It's tough for all of us. But, I mean, like, if we drive somewhere, I have to pull off. We rarely go anywhere because it's so difficult. He can't hardly leave the house. He can't wear clothes a lot of days. There's all kinds of reasons we don't go anywhere. But we have to pull over, like, every couple of blocks or every couple of miles so that he can pee in a bottle as we're on our way to wherever. And at home, to watch TV, we have pads on the floor so he can get up and pee on the pad so he doesn't have to run all the way to the bathroom, which he's too scared to go down the hallway by himself anyway, so he has to be accompanied. But
wow.
It's just all kinds of stuff. It's a mix of stuff, and we're trying to figure out what it is. But we have a doctor's appointment this week, and hoping to God that we get some result from it. It's something.
And this is an eminent authority, allegedly.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. But
although I'll tell you from experience, we've come hundreds of miles in our understanding of the human mind, but we are still standing outside, kind of peering around the corners in terms of our understanding of the way the mind actually works and the brain, why it functions and malfunctions.
Right. There's no blood test you can do and say, okay, it's blankety blank. Here's the pill and you're fine.
Sure.
It's not even close to like that.
Right.
So he hasn't been on any medication of any kind for a long time. I hate to go back down that road, but I suppose we're going to. I welcome your emails and texts on why that's an awful thing to do. But if you end up in this situation, you handle it the way you think is best.
Would you like to go through the list of things you have considered, looked at, read about, been told about to stem the flow of emails?
Some of them have been really good, some of the suggestions. Some of them have been crappy.
And absolutely every single one of them is well-meaning. And I don't mean to be cynical about it.
No.
But as the guy who goes through the emails, I'll tell you, there have been a lot of them.
Oh, yeah, I get a lot of this sounds like what our kid was like and this happened. You know what I've gotten the most of, which I'm hoping for? I hope we can find something that will help before then. But I've gotten a lot of that sounds similar to our kid. And then about puberty, it went away.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
And we've received first-person reports from fellas. It's all been guys talking about that. Similar. I mean, I don't claim to know all the details of your son's situation, but, similar in enough ways that it's striking.
I'll tell you one thing, though, about my son. He is one funny SOB. And I don't know if that's part of the whole, a lot of artists are, troubled in a lot of different ways. It's as common can be.
Yeah.
But he is brilliantly funny.
Hmm.
And some of it is the amount of television that he takes in, because the only thing that can calm down his mind enough to, like, even function is a lot of times watching TV. So he takes in a lot of comedies, cartoons and stuff like that, a lot of the classic Looney Tunes and that sort of stuff. But he is so freaking funny. It blows my mind.
I would like to consult on what he's watching. I know you don't really need that, but I have some ideas.
Gotten into a little Three Stooges. I'm wanting to go farther down that line, although I don't want to get hit in the back of the head with a ladder very often. So.
Once is enough. Have you gone Marx Brothers yet?
No, I have not.
Oh, my goodness. I can make recommendations.
You think that works on a six-year-old? Or?
Yes. Oh, yeah, a kid is as bright and attuned to humor as he is, yes.
Awesome.
I don't recall the first, or how old I was when I first heard the Abbott and Costello Who's On First.
All right. Oh, yeah.
But that was a timeless thing, and I made my dad replay that probably 50 times the first good time one. I heard it.
He's a little young for the fabulous Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, as there are some horror elements of that. They're like 2 minutes twice in the movie, but Frankenstein's pretty scary there for a minute. But soon he'll be ready for that. Another comedy classic.
When I was a kid, when we'd get home from Sunday school on
Sundays.
And then
the Hangover movies. Yeah, wait till he's nine.
And then anything with Amy Schumer in it.
Oh, oh Lord.
Pulp Fiction is actually very funny.
When I was a kid, when you get home from Sunday school, there was always some old black and white, and it was a lot of Abbott and Costello, a lot of Marx Brothers, and a lot of Laurel and Hardy, which is freaking hilarious,
and even
more old-timey.
Did your channel get the Sherlock Holmes and the Charlie Chan movies?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got those, too. Yeah, those were the Sherlock Holmes movies were great. Charlie Chan, a little uncomfortable with the fact that it was a white guy squinting. It's kind of, you know, not cool these days.
I didn't know that. That is?
Didn't
age well.
Exactly.
He's not Asian?
No. But his son was, clearly, I think. But please don't be angry at me for my poor memory of Charlie Chan movies. Our beloved Asian listeners.
Long time no see.
That's right. We found. Never mind. I don't even want to get into that. Anyway, obviously, we all wish you well in your inquiries. I mean, yeah, with the doctor.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons that when I hear people say we've got to do something about the mental illness problem in this country and homeless and this and that and school shooters and everything like that. And I think, yeah, I'm dealing with that. It's not that easy to figure out who's got what problem, and then come up with a cure for it. In fact, it's damn near impossible.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's a problem. We got a lot of mentally ill people. It would seem more than we used to have and in some new ways. Who knows why, whether it's social media or chemicals or whatever. But it's damn hard to diagnose and damn hard to treat.
Right.
And expensive.
Right. Well, yeah, and for, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but I would imagine it's the vast majority of people who struggle with this sort of thing. They have had family members who love them very much trying as hard as they can for as long as they can and trying to get that loved one the help they need. But once they become an adult, you're fairly limited in your options. And, you know, and sometimes the person muddles through life and has an okay life. Sometimes it ends badly. It's just, it's a very, very hard thing. Mental illness is, especially where it comes up against law enforcement. I don't mean to make everybody sad, but it's a hard, hard issue. And you bring up the homeless thing and man, that's a tough nut to crack. You got civil liberties mixed in as well. How do you deny somebody their freedom? Because you think they're nuts? I don't know. They thought Galileo was nuts. No, I'll grant you. There are plenty of people that are pretty clearly disturbed, and it's not that their theory of the universe or their drawings of helicopters or that's Da Vinci. Sorry, they're clearly struggling. But how do you take somebody's freedom away? It's a very difficult question to ask.
One thing I wondered
to
about,
answer rather,
if you go to see a guy who's supposedly the best in the world at something,
yeah,
and he says, "Darned if I know." Then what do?
You wait and see.
Jeez. It's like being the number two Proust expert. I mean, I don't know.
It's a little like that. That is a reference to Little Miss Sunshine?
Little Miss Sunshine, yeah.
Oh,
that was
God.
Steve Carell's of the character. He was the world's number two Proust expert, and his wife ran off with the number one.
Right.
That's really got a sting.
Oh, it did.
It did.
It did.
That was the whole point.
Prime motivator in that charming movie.
Have you seen the ads for the new Steve Carell movie? Could as he said on Saturday Night Live the other night, somebody stood up, why don't we do an Office redo? Then you wouldn't have to make all these sad movies. He's got a new movie out that looks so freaking sad.
I haven't seen
one of the great comedic actors of a generation.
Just a quick in-show meeting note. I moved us off of sad. There a second ago. You want to go back to sad?
I just think it's interesting that a guy who's a great comedic actor, Daily Show, and then all these funny movies he did and everything like that. Now he's dedicated, 40-year-old virgin, now he's dedicated himself to, what's the saddest motion picture I could make?
Oh, boy.
This is about a kid that was, like, abused by his schoolmates and had to form his own mind. I mean, it's just, like, really super over the top. What are you doing?
I got a question for you. Who goes to those movies? Is it people who have a lot of that in their life?
You know what I want to do tonight, honey? Let's go be sad. And it's only $20.
Or is it somebody with no drama in their life whatsoever, and they kind of want to pick that bone.
It's people like me. Like, I don't have the dramas of a family life, right? So I get to kind of peer through the looking glass at these, assuming a very well-done piece of art.
Go ahead.
Somehow I can access that emotional feeling.
I think
feeling.
That is so interesting. I used to think that, like, married people with kids didn't go to movies because they don't have time. That is definitely part of it.
Right.
But a lot of it is you need zero drama. You need zero anything making you feel emotion.
I don't need joy on the screen. I don't need tragedy on the screen. I don't need stress. I don't need suspense. I don't need anything.
I don't need to contemplate life and death.
I need a little sleep.
On any level.
Right.
Maybe that's why the Hollywood crowd's so into it, because there's a lot less, you know, child raising going on. I don't know.
Right. Right. Interesting perspective.
Oof.
Oof, indeed.
God, I can't imagine my wife and I sitting down and watching, for instance, this Steve Carell movie. I deal with this every day of my life. Why would I want to watch this movie?
Right. Right. Hey, honey, you want to go see a really sad movie about a kid? She'd probably kill you.
Anyway, I'll let you know how it turns out, or not, depending on my mood. I have no idea. I probably shouldn't talk about it as it is.
I think people who are dealing with similar stuff appreciate it. For what
I
that's
hope
worth.
So. I deal it when I appreciate when people dealing with similar stuff talk to me about it.
Right.
It's always helpful. You are listening to the Armstrong and Getty Show.
Armstrong and Getty.
The conscience of the nation.
Guy is a wrecking ball that is just now not the Khashoggi incident, but when you put everything together, you got a profile of somebody who can't take criticism, who is turning Saudi Arabia upside down in the Mideast in the process. This guy is a wrecking
ball. Oops.
I changed my mind because I'm pissed.
The volatile Lindsey Graham there on the Armstrong and Getty Show. Trying to get to the bottom of this vote in the Senate. It's symbolic. But they voted to suspend U.S. support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen. And it would appear to be partly... Well, listen, you got to start with the fact that it's a humanitarian nightmare. Yet another humanitarian nightmare where thousands of civilians are being killed and many are just starving to death. As, you know... If I were going to be cynical and exhausted, I'd say a couple of, you know, a sand country lunatic totalitarian regimes are fighting to the death over some godforsaken piece of land, which is actually a pretty good description of it. But you got the Saudis and Iranian-backed rebels fighting for control of Yemen, which is right on Saudi's doorstep. And, you know, it's not surprising that we've been backing the Saudis and trying to help them keep control of Yemen, or at least not give over control. But this vote to suspend our help is based partly in that the war isn't really going anywhere. It's a humanitarian nightmare, but also because some senators are crazy mad about the snuffing of this Khashoggi character. But it would seem that several, Lindsey Graham among them, is just so, well, as he quaintly put it, pissed that the CIA didn't send the head gal over to talk to him about the Khashoggi snuffing. And so it's a kind of a protest vote on that level. You know, it'll never pass the House anyway, and it's just a symbolic gesture. But I just think it's interesting that they would grab the president by his shirt and shake him like that over what seems to me, I mean, listen, all that stuff's serious and all of it's important, I guess, but doesn't seem to me that there'd be an adequate reason to completely derail your foreign policy in the region. I just don't get it. Although, you know, you got your coalition, Lindsey Graham's one of them, Bob Corker of Tennessee, who's, I think he's retiring, isn't he? He might be another one. We're fine with being buddies with the Saudis, but this BSM, or MSM, MSB, and there it is. Mainstream media. No, MSB, Mohammed bin Salman. They just think he's a lunatic and dangerous, and they don't want him in power, and they're trying to send the message to the other 877 princes and Saud family, potentates, that they don't want MSB to be in charge anymore. I guess. It's a little mystifying. Complete change of topic. Michael, do you have any transition music ready for us? 2, 3, 4. Whenever we change topic or mood so abruptly and jarringly that it would not work, we pad with transition music. I don't even remember what we were talking about, which is the role of transition music. Woo-hoo! All right, turn it off. Better make it stop. Great piece. Thanks to frequent contributor Jeff for passing this along. And if you ever see something you think we ought to be talking about, send it along. Email it, mailbag@armstrongandgetty.com. It is physically impossible for even the crew here to take in, you know, everything that's flying around the interwebs and everything. And y'all are great at spotting good stuff, but it's mailbag@armstrongandgetty.com. But anyway, Jeff passed along this piece by a fellow by the name of Andy Ngo. He's Vietnamese, NGO. I don't know how to pronounce that. Stands for non-governmental organization. Ngo, is that right? Or no, maybe just no. Dr. No. And it's about Portlandia, a city that I have a huge love-hate relationship with. It's a metro area my son used to live. He moved away, and maybe I shouldn't quote him without his permission. Now I've gotten this far. My son, who is 24 now, just turned 24, a very clever young man, said, and I quote, "Dad, I want to live somewhere that's hip and cool," because he's a musician, you know, songwriter and all. He said, "I want to live somewhere that's cool, but not so up its own butt about how cool it is," which I think is a pretty good description of what Portlandia, a formerly wonderful city, has become. It's now insane, even as it remains, you know, beautiful and fun place to, you know, see music and art and eat and walk and look at the river and the rest of it. Anyway, but this piece by Andy quote, "Your parents would be embarrassed by you," a masked woman said as she blocked me from walking into a downtown Portland plaza. Okay, that's physical blocking, which is, you know, one step short of violence. It was an Antifa counter-protest taking place. Joined by others, a group of black-clad masked individuals surrounded me. "You're an Asian giving into white supremacy, mother effer," one shouted. Why did I, a Vietnamese-American gay journalist, receive this reaction from a self-described anti-racist social justice movement? Because I tried to report honestly on Antifa, the far-left movement of communists, socialists, and anarchists who agitate for revolution. Their MO, he points out, is directing confrontation against their opponents and direct confrontation by any means necessary, including violence. Sometimes they go after actual neo-Nazi groups, but much more often their fury is directed at less dangerous targets, conservatives, business owners, and state institutions. Sympathetic media outlets like to portray them as anti-fascist heroes, confronting the extreme right instead of the radical street militia, which they actually are. And he does a really nice job, and we'll post this article so you can see the whole thing. He does a great job of describing the events at a counter demonstration. There's this tiny little hashtag him too rally in Portland. It drew 50 attendees, but it also drew the Antifa people who are cracking heads, beating people down. They smashed in the head of a lefty who had a flag because they thought he was a righty.
Right.
And he does a great job of explaining how Portland has become a cesspool because they've let it become that way. Marshall Phillips, what are our other headlines?
Well, President Trump tearing into his former lawyer for flipping, latest on the El Chapo trial, and just announced at last a male contraceptive coming up.
It's all coming on the Armstrong and Getty Show. We haven't talked much about the infamous caravan today, but the word is definitely in. It's indisputable from the Mexican government, from reporters embedded, just observations. the vast majority are not brave people fleeing persecution and violence. They're just your standard issue people who want a better life and a better job, which is fine. I admire them for trying to improve their lives. They're gutsy and they're tough. Honestly, I admire them. And there are now hundreds of identified criminals and MS-13 members, hundreds of them,
right,
out of the several thousand. It's probably somewhere around 7 or 8%, based on what I've heard on pretty good authority, are criminals. And a tiny percentage are what has been portrayed consistently by the media, people with legitimate, reason to be a refugee.
Right.
A tiny percentage.
Right.
Mostly just people who want a better job. But they're subject to the laws of the United States and immigration laws. So wait in line. Marshall Phillips has the news. Marshall?
Well, President Trump tearing into his former attorney, Michael Cohen, talking with reporters at the White House today. Trump said Cohen has ulterior motives by pleading guilty in the Russia probe about a Trump real estate project in Russia.
He's a weak person, and what he's trying to do is get a reduced sentence. So he's lying about a project that everybody knew about. I mean, we were very open with it.
Trump adding,
he was convicted with a fairly long-term sentence on things totally unrelated to the Trump organization, having to do with mortgages and having to do with cheating the IRS, perhaps.
In a court appearance, Cohen said negotiations over a major Trump real estate deal in Moscow ran through the 2016 presidential campaign and beyond. The president saying to that,
it was a well-known project. It was during the early part of 16, and I guess even before that. It lasted a short period of time. I didn't do the project. I decided not to do the project.
And Trump went on to add,
the primary reason, it was very simple, I was focused on running for president. There would be nothing wrong if I did do it. I was running my business while I was campaigning.
There you go. That's pretty much the rebuke that President Trump handed down this morning.
And we wait with bated breath to read the Mueller report, which I have predicted will be a boatload of eye of the beholder, you know, associations that may or may not be savory, depending on how you see the world.
El Chapo's former top aide says he is too scared to testify against the alleged Mexican drug kingpin.
I'm sure he is.
Story checks out.
Yeah, he's seen the heads head south and the bodies head north.
Miguel Angel Martinez told jurors yesterday he believes Joaquin Guzman ordered four separate hits on him while he was jailed in Mexico.
It seems like plenty.
Waiting to be extradited to the U.S. So on Monday, the man who claimed to be a former top lieutenant to Guzman testified about paying millions in bribes to Mexican officials. There's a lot of people saying, hey, we were paying bribes to all of these top guys here, you know, former presidents and the like.
Sure, yeah.
So everybody is passing the buck in more ways than one. Turns out Dick's Sporting Goods posting a drop in sales over the last quarter after it tightened up gun sale rules at its stores following the Parkland, Florida school massacre. The CEO at the time said the company had been motivated by the activism of the shooting survivors, but revenue is now down about 4.5% to still about $1.9 billion, which is not shabby. The chain raised the age to buy a gun to 21 and had stopped selling assault-type rifles after the gunman killed the people at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in February.
That's fine. You're a private business. Do whatever you think is proper with your private business. On the other hand, there is no need to send me three emails every day, dicks. Three every day? I know you're there. I know you stock. Let me think about it. Sporting Goods. Did I get that right? So if I need any, I'll let you know.
We have a revolutionary new male contraceptive about to undergo trials at the University of Washington School of Medicine in Seattle. School is now enrolling couples for the trials. They'll test a contraceptive gel for the men that's applied to the upper arms and shoulders each day.
I didn't see that coming.
What?
And then it gets absorbed through the skin. It is designed to reduce sperm production without reducing sexual drive or enjoyment.
There you go.
All you have to do is just rub it over your heart. What could go wrong?
Its effects reverse once a man has stopped using it. Meanwhile, Tesla's CEO Elon Musk says nobody has ever changed the world working 40 hours a week. He tweeted there are easier places to work than companies like Tesla and SpaceX, but if getting things done really matter to you, you're going to have to invest a significantly larger amount of time. One user on Twitter asked how many hours somebody had to work each week to change the world, and Musk said 80 hours is sustainable with peaks at times above 100 hours.
All right, fine, Elon. We're not all perhaps evil super geniuses. And most of us would get to the end of our life and say, oh my God, my husband, my wife, my children, every relationship I ever cared about, I neglected them to stay at work at Tesla. What was I thinking? Ugh, now I'm dead. That's what you will think. So with all due respect, Elon, you talk about tunnels and hyperloops and electric cars, and the rest of us will worry about work-life balance.
And we have a celebrity wedding to announce. Quentin Tarantino is tying the knot. The director of Pulp Fiction and Kill Bill married his longtime girlfriend, an Israeli singer named Daniela Pick, in an intimate ceremony yesterday in Los Angeles.
Can we hear some of her her overall? Daniela Pick? How do you spell
Daniela
that?
Pick.
Like a guitar pick?
Yes, P-I-C-K.
Okay.
Daniela Pick.
Fantastic. What do you want? You want a, the wedding's going to be bloody joke, or you want a, they're going to start with I do, then shift to the bride walking in.
I like doing the wedding out of sequence. That's
and,
good.
And then the message from the minister, then back to the beginning.
The honeymoon was in October.
Right, exactly. A little Quentin Tarantino humor for you. Oh, and lots of N-bombs. A lot more N-bombs than you're used to at a wedding.
Tarantino and his 35-year-old bride met 8 years ago when Tarantino was in Israel promoting his 2009 film Inglourious Bastards.
Judy and I were looking for something to watch the other day, and Hateful Eight was about to come on, or we hadn't on the DVR, I can't remember. And we'd watched it before, but she had no memory of it. I said, how could you not have any memory? The snowstorm and the cabin in the... And the prisoner, the chick.
The facial hair, all the facial hair.
And the English get, but did, no, okay.
There you go.
I opted for something else. She wasn't in the mood for gallons of blood.
It's understandable.
That's your news. I'm Marshall Phillips of the Armstrong and Getty Show, the conscience of the nation.
Here's some Daniela Pick.
Yes, please. Yeah. How much time do we have, Michael?
Oh,
that's lovely.
Scantily clad in the video. I don't know when she starts singing. Let me fast forward. Here we go.
Going in and out in circles, and again.
Oh, she sounds like a singer.
Fairly typical pop singer of the 21st century, but scantily clad, you say? That's excellent, because I demand artists show their body parts to me for me to appreciate their art.
Why you're a Louis C.K. fan.
Right.
Thanks. Beautiful. More to come. It's the Armstrong and Getty Show.
Armstrong and Getty.
The conscience of the nation.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
Run and tell all of the angels, this could take all night.
I am vowing this weekend I'm going to get my kids into SpongeBob SquarePants. I got to admit, I've got that hole in my life. I've never seen a minute of it, and I'm always looking for content to keep my kids blindly staring at some sort of screen while I do other things. So we'll go with SpongeBob SquarePants.
According to most SpongeBobian scholars, first three seasons.
Okay.
Go there. Speaking of screen time, I promised this note yesterday, and we just didn't get to it, but Aaron in San Diego mentions that his lad, his little boy, is just about 8 months old, and he's doing a lot of reading about the developing minds of babies and toddlers, something I did, too, when my kids were little.
His eight-month-old is? That's astounding.
No, the father is. Aaron, the man, is the grown man. And he's talking about how the experts have deemed that zero screen time until around age two is probably the right course of action. Their reasoning is eye-opening to me, he writes, as I believe it applies to us adults just as much as it applies to our children, as the mind never really stops developing. Well, at least for most of us, it doesn't, he says, and I blew his punchline. Screen time is linked to the following human deficiencies. See if this rings a bell for you, my friends. I've already read it, and I'll tell you it does for me. Shorter attention span. We could just stop the discussion right there. Reading a book to me sounds like running an ultra marathon.
Yeah, but I never felt like I had that. I don't know what my life would have been like without television, right? Because I started watching TV at a young age. But I was certainly able to read books up until smartphone world came along.
Yeah.
Something's different about that from watching a show on a TV or a TV show on a pad or whatever. Oh,
I would agree.
I don't know what.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think screen time, most of the time people mentioning screen time these days mean smartphone, tablet, computer, as opposed to watching television.
Well,
although with little kids, it could be different. I don't know.
My kids watch a lot of TV shows on computer screens. So I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Moving along. So we got shorter attention span. Sleep deprivation. The blue light effect.
Oh, I got to back up. Just because.
Short attention span. Can't pay attention to what we're talking about. Yes?
Last week, we're off for a week. I vowed I was going to read a book.
Yeah.
Something I used to do regularly. Well, I did it all the time, but certainly on a vacation, I would pick a book, usually like a bigger, harder one on a vacation because I had a little more time. And I'm going to read a book. And I thought, I'm going to do that because I haven't done that in I don't know how many vacations. Now, part of that is I got kids now, but part of it is my struggling attention span. So we go to Big Aquarium in Monterey, California. I'm going to read Cannery Row, one of my favorite all-time books by John Steinbeck. Not even a very long book.
Never read it because I don't like canned fish, but go on.
That's a perfectly reasonable stance. But that really could be in my top five books of all time. Mm. So I'm excited to read it about it again. I read maybe 20 pages of it, loved every page, but I would always go back to what are the headlines over at the New York Post or whatever. I can't.
Needed that shot of endorphins.
My brain is, and this is a troubling thing for me to say as a guy who's been so in love with reading long books. My brain is broken.
Oh, boy.
And I'm sure it can be fixed with applied getting away from instantaneous candy of the smartphone. But right now, it's almost impossible for me to read a book.
Wow.
Which is a terrible thing to admit.
Well, it's brave. You're a brave man.
And this started for me as a full-on man in your 40s grown-up.
Right.
Imagine kids who've never had anything but this pace.
It makes me sad.
They may never read a book in their lives.
It freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sleep deprivation, the blue light effect, depression and anxiety, and just having more trouble figuring out what is real or important, slower language development, poor social skills, or complete lack thereof, inability to self-soothe or cope.
Ooh, boy,
millennials are always saying how they can't even, you know, and then they've got to be soothed. I don't know.
Boy.
I'm just throwing this stuff out here. I'm not saying I agree with all of it, but I think I probably do. Irritability and acting out. Aaron mentions Facebook and Twitter rants. I think that has as much to do with the drug of anonymity, which is like cocaine at an 80s party. It just makes people act out like lunatics. Anonymity does. But
that self-soothing one, I think about that when I'm standing in line for anything and I whip out my phone, because that's funny. It wasn't that many years ago. If I stood in line, I just stood there.
Yeah.
Daydreaming about something. Now I've got to look at my phone. Because 2 minutes with nothing? Oh, my God.
Lately, because I'm better than you, I try as hard as I can to do that. If I'm doing anything where I would look down at my phone, I keep it in my pocket and I just think. I'm convinced that's important.
I have almost soiled
my... What I think about is grabbing my phone.
I have almost soiled my pants when I need to go to the bathroom and I can't put my hands on my phone because the idea of sitting in there with just my thoughts for 5 to 15 minutes.
Oh, boy.
Never mind
the smartphone discussion. Let's talk about fiber. Holy cow.
The idea of being alone with my thoughts for 5 minutes just sounds horrific. So I got it. Where's my phone?
Oh, man. You're like a Coke fiend.
Absolutely.
Listen to this. This is more about parenting than neurological development, but man, does it ring true. Power struggles when attempting to take the device away, writes Aaron.
Oh, yeah.
Try taking an adult screen away from them. See what happens. I tried. It wasn't pretty. One of the worst nights of my life. I don't know who he was trying to pry the screen. It was a stranger on a bus.
What are you doing? This is a $700 iPad.
That's mine. They shouldn't be looking at it. What? Who are you?
Yeah, we've shut off the shows with the, especially our youngest, who is a different case, but before, and he throws a fit, and we think he's, you know, seeing too much stuff if he reacts this way to turning off a show.
Yeah, that's, well, and again, your son has issues that, you know, are not necessarily common, but you can gauge the depth of, I want to be fair with my term, I could use addiction. Let me just say enthusiasm slash relationship with something by how much a kid goes crazy when you take it away. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And if a little kid goes berserk at the thought of their smartphone being taken away or whatever, not being allowed to, you know, you got to understand, wow, that's really woven into them. And that's troubling. And never mind kids, raising kids. I'm talking us adults. We got to take a hard look at ourselves.
And oh, yeah.
I spend a lot of time worrying about my kids who at this point range from ages 19 to 26. And I just worry what has happened to their brain. And I feel a small measure of guilt about having permitted it to happen.
Who knew?
Well, our kids got phones for safety purposes, I think in middle school, but they weren't like smartphones. Not till significantly later. But no, we didn't know. We didn't understand it. I'm just hoping.
I think in the near future, kids are not going to be getting smartphones.
How many Silicon Valley geniuses, innovators, gurus have to come out and say, I don't let my kids use our app before the word gets around?
And it's almost universal. I can't imagine letting my kids have a smartphone in high school. Right now, you'd have to make a strong argument for why they need it.
Right. Now, Mark Zuckerberg doesn't have kids because I think as the Antichrist, he's not allowed to reproduce. I got to reread, you know, the Old Testament. Unless he does like a Rosemary's Baby thing, his classic A Devil Impregnated Me movie for those not in the know. But because as the Antichrist, I don't believe he can reproduce with a human woman. So he hasn't spoken on that topic. But certainly a number of his co-creators have come out and said, no way. Get your kid off this. Man, that's meaningful.
What does it say about human nature that you carry in your hand really everything that's ever been done is available to you in your hand, and you don't choose the complete works of Shakespeare or the Bible or whatever whatever you want to come up with, the Federalist Papers. None of that stuff.
It's because Candy Crush is more fun than the Federalist Papers.
You go with just crap. Mm. Just occupy your time with crap. That says something about human nature.
Yep.
Yeah. Disturbing. You are listening to the Armstrong and Getty Show.